On today's show, the Heat advance to the Eastern Conference Finals and the Sixers enter a pivotal offseason with a ton of questions while the Suns and Mavs get set for their Game 7. What does Miami advancing mean for their chances to get to the finals? And should we worry about the Suns? Plus, will the Warriors or Bucks end their series on Friday night? All of that and much more on today's Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On NBA, your daily podcast on the NBA, however you may be tuning in, YouTube, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with Adam Mares. We'll get to what went wrong for the Suns in their blowout loss to the Mavs later on, plus take a look at Friday night's potential series clinchers and come up with some new season awards. But first, the Heat went into Philadelphia and beat the Sixers 99-90, and it didn't feel that close, getting 32 points from Jimmy Butler, 20 from Max Strus, and a phenomenal defensive performance from Bam Adebayo to take Game 6, eliminate the Sixers, and advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, where they'll face the winner of the Bucks and Celtics series, which many people are calling right now the real Eastern Conference Finals. So how much truth do we think there is to that? Because obviously Embiid was injured, James Harden was disappointing against the Heat, and that's where most of the conversation so far regarding the Heat Sixers series has gone. But the Heat were also very impressive. They limited James Harden. They were particularly really impressive in these last two blowout wins, especially on defense, and it seems like their offense is starting to turn a corner here. Adam, where are you on this Heat team, and do you think that calling Bucks Celtics the Eastern Conference Finals is unfairly overlooking the Heat as real contenders?
I think it is. I do think that both of those teams should be favorites over Miami, but I don't think Miami's drawing dead by any means. I mean, Wes, one of the storylines of this postseason for me has been how much we as analysts and fans, I think at large, undervalue what it is that makes great basketball teams, the connectedness. And we're seeing this in Miami when you go down the list and you're getting to Max Strus and Gabe Vincent and some of these guys, you think like, these aren't names that ring out. They're not all-star players, but that team has really come together. They have an identity. They execute that identity. They're all cohesive and connected. You go over to Dallas, again, not a lot of all-star caliber players, but they understand their identity and everybody accepts that role. And then when you flip that and look at the teams like the Brooklyns and the Lakers and some of these teams that have floundered, either not making the playoffs or getting bounced quickly, you know, it was the opposite of that. So to me, the Heat are less talented, I think, than Boston and Milwaukee when you just talk about top-tier talent. But they are as connected and understand their identity as well as anybody remaining in the NBA.
The Bucks or the Celtics, whoever win that series, will absolutely be favored, despite the Heat having the number one seed and home court advantage. But they do have things going for them, the Heat do. They have home court advantage, number one. Okay. I think it's a really good point by you. And you can almost extrapolate that as the story of this season, potentially, is, you know, connectedness over talent, right? And the Heat have that connected. And it's not like they're not talented. They're more talented than the 60-win Hawks from a few years ago, right? Like, they have a guy in Jimmy Butler who's borderline, you know, top 12, 13, put him wherever you want, borderline top 10. Bam Adebayo, who's a legitimate defensive player of the year type of guy, wasn't really considered only because of games played. And they have a ton of depth. They have more depth than I think any of the other teams, you know, Milwaukee or Boston, that's for sure, even though they don't have that top line type of talent. But Jimmy Butler's playing like one of those dudes right now. He's arguably been the best player in the playoffs. I know that he's not the best player in the playoffs, but he's probably the best gamer in the playoffs. I think I've made this point before where he knows what his team needs, and he raises his game to a level that he goes toe-to-toe with these guys. I mean, he was going head-to-head with Joel Embiid, and I know he was hurt and all these things, but, you know, the Heat now have limited Trae Young. They have limited Joel Embiid. They have limited James Harden. They are the common denominator in all of those things. And so I think that that defense is something that needs to be feared. They have Jimmy Butler running, leading the way for them. And their poise, their understanding of the moment, in addition to their connectivity. I mean, you look at their opportunity tonight to win Game 6, not have to worry about a potential Game 7, even if it was back in Miami, they just understood what the moment called for. And that's not something that the Suns could say tonight. That's not something that the Warriors could say after blowing it in Memphis. Like, the Heat are the team that went ahead and did that thing. And they just have such a tremendous amount of poise that I don't think that even after losing two straight games, they come back and win two straight to take the series. They don't get shaken. They have poise. They have that connectedness. I don't know if that's enough to get to the finals or win the finals. I just know that they're being unfairly overlooked and not really being considered as legit contenders because they do have a chance.
I mean, you even look at the margins. You know, they won the turnover battle. They won the rebounding battle. And you're talking about a team that features Joel Embiid, you know, prides themselves on having a paint presence, and they dominated the rebound battle in this series. So those are the things that you have to beat Miami. You have to outplay them. They're not going to beat themselves. They're not going to gift you a game and fall asleep in a quarter or this or that. You have to beat them every second that you're on the court, and that goes a long way. And then the part that I think you kind of skimmed right past, talking about Jimmy Butler, top 15, top 10 player, top three player in the playoffs so far. Yeah. I mean that sincerely. You got Giannis. I think those are the only two guys I feel comfortable slotting ahead of him when you just talk about to this point who has performed the best. He has turned into the superstar version of him, which we've seen before, but he's turned back into that. And throw out the regular season, throw out the fact that you're right, there were a lot of players that were better than him for not just the regular season, but for the last couple of years. Right now, he's playing like a guy that believes and is on a mission. So again, do I think they can win the championship? No, I still would pick against them, but I just am not going to rule them out.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, right? Like I think after Milwaukee beat Boston the other night, I'm probably favoring them right now in the Eastern Conference, but that doesn't mean that the Heat should be just overlooked completely. One last point on Jimmy Butler. People keep calling this like a bubble type of run. This is better than the bubble run. He's averaging 6 points more than he did in the bubble. He's better in every single way. Let's stop doing the bubble run stuff. Like that was 2 years ago. This is a different team, different kinds of players, and Jimmy Butler is playing even better than he was in that.
Can I tell you, though, Wes, the more interesting storyline tonight, though, is the other side of this.
Yes. Let's do it. Let's turn to the Sixers, who have a lot of decisions to make this summer. Notably, what are they going to do with James Harden, who's a free agent, and Doc Rivers, who has been rumored in two different ways, rumored connected to the Lakers job potentially, or also rumored to be coaching for his job in Philadelphia. Either he's going to be leaving them for a different team, or they're going to be firing him and he's going to be forced to find another job anywhere. I don't know what's going on. What to you is the most interesting thing?
I mean, we get to the offseason, there's going to be no shortage of that, but I believe, and I've been very critical on Philadelphia, I'm far from biased sometimes in this way. I believe that the last few years, and I've said this, there's been a culture of finger pointing that for some reason has like really grown and even festered over the last couple of years. And of course it culminated last year with the comments, basically everybody from coaches to players pointing the finger at Ben Simmons. There's the problem. We identified it. Get rid of him. We got this solved. Tonight, immediately afterwards, you get Joel Embiid going to the podium and basically saying, hey, Harden's a different guy. And I know if you watch the quote, when he's talking about James Harden and says he's more at this stage, he's not Houston James Harden anymore. He's more of a facilitator. You take that quote in a vacuum and you think, weird thing to say. Joel's smart. He's savvy. He understands that that soundbite can be interpreted many different ways. But then I think he'd go ahead and say like, hey, let's get over this. He's actually saying what we all think he is. When he gets into asking about Daryl Morey and do you think he's done a good job at this point? He goes, oh yeah, he brought in Seth, who was great. Of course, Seth Curry, who he traded away, brought in Andre, obviously being tongue in cheek. To me, it's here we are again. It's almost a mirror image of last year where the court is still warm from the game ending, and we're already starting to talk about pointing fingers and making passive aggressive comments. I could be overstating this. I'm curious.
I don't think you are. I don't think you are. Specifically when he said he's not Houston James Harden anymore. He's more of a facilitator on a night where Jimmy Butler scored, 32 points and James Harden scored 11. And James Harden in that second half, 23 minutes, two shots.
Wow.
Total. James Harden took, not made, took. And then Joel Embiid talking about Jimmy Butler, wondering, I don't even know. He says, I can't believe we let that guy go. You can tell that if it was up to Joel Embiid, he'd be playing with Jimmy Butler and Seth Curry and him. And that would be it. And it wouldn't be James Harden. It wouldn't be Ben Simmons. It wouldn't be
I say something though here, Wes? Because there's always a kernel of truth to this. Like, I'm sure there are 76ers fans or Joel Embiid's sympathizers who are sitting here nodding their head saying he's right. Because he is. There are things that you could point to and say, hey, man, you brought in James Harden, not exactly known as a winner, not exactly known as a tough guy, and oh, by the way, a bit of a clunky fit. You could point to all those things, but here's the problem. At some point, you have to understand that things aren't perfect. This is the NBA. Nobody has it perfect. We are coming out of a half decade, a little bit more than a half decade of superstars trying to create the perfect environment. Can't lose, can't miss. That is not the history of the NBA. The history of the NBA, by and large, is teams having to figure things out and going the hard way. There's too many good teams, too many good players that you have to deal with what you have and get the most out of it. And I just, to me, James Harden, yes, he does have his flaws. He's still good. Tyrese Maxey is good. There's talent there. Can you get better on the edges? Can you add some pieces? Of course. But I don't know. I hear some of these quotes and I feel like we're much closer to the end of the process than I think I thought 24 hours ago.
I could not help watching this game but think, does Joel Embiid ever win a championship in his prime? Because if you're gonna re-sign James Harden to a max, he's not getting any better. Right. He's not getting any younger. Well, that's basically your team. And we know Daryl Morey, as long as he's in charge there, he's gonna ride that James Harden, you know, train. I don't mean to overstate things, but I get worried because Joel Embiid is a guy who deserves to win a championship. And this is not a great situation for him right now.
3 years ago, Chris Paul looked like he was done. He's just finishing up three straight phenomenal years, some of the best of his entire career. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's differences in how they've taken care of their body and their reputations off the court or this or that. So maybe it's an unfair comparison because Harden won't get there. But at least it's possible and at least there's hope. And let's be honest, James Harden at his best, a phenomenal player. Yeah. So I don't want to say if you're a 76er, there's no reason to completely sort of give up hope. This could just be raw emotions after a disappointing playoff. And oh, by the way, Joel Embiid had a fractured face. He had a bum hand. Like,
yes,
this was also not his shot as well. He can be better than this. Yeah. So there's all these things, but one just to kind of bring back the negative aspect of this, Danny Green went out tonight and the report was that they fear it's actually a serious injury. Danny Green has one more year on his contract with $10 million. He's a good piece to a championship puzzle, although at $10 million, that's maybe a little bit steep. But nonetheless, he is a very tradable piece. That's a piece you look at and you say, if you were to make a trade, if you're Philadelphia and you want to get better, that's maybe your best way. Well, if it's a serious injury, and we'll find out, one, for him, he's been around for quite a while. Injuries at this stage of your career can end a career. Yes. But two, as the 76ers try to build a championship contender, if that's a trade asset, a trade piece that is now off the table for them, their job of building, Daryl Morey's job just got 1,000 times harder.
That's a really good point. I don't really know where they go from here. I guess we'll find out. Like I said, James Harden's a free agent. Doc Rivers' job is up in the air, according to rumors and reports. I guess we'll find out. But coming up next, Luka Doncic and the Mavericks are pushing the Suns to a game 7. We'll talk about why they have a chance to pull off this upset next. But first, this episode is brought to you by Built Bar. And I know you guys have heard us talk about Built Bar a million times. Built Bar has really come through for me in the playoffs, Adam, like for real. I got a new box. I take them to the Heat games instead of eating like the pretzels and the chips and everything that they have out for media, unhealthy stuff. I have a Built Bar in my backpack ready to go whenever I need my pick me up. And on long nights like this, Thursday nights, where we're staying up late and watching all these games and recapping them late in the night, Built Bar is a perfect way to help me get through. Also, Built Bar has great new products coming out all the time, including birthday cake puffs. Imagine dipping your finger into that plastic tub of birthday cake frosting and then opening your eyes and realizing that was only 150 calories and there was packed with 16 grams of protein. That's what it's like to eat a birthday cake puff from Built. I just received my birthday cake puffs and I have never had anything like this before. They're available right now and we can't promise that they will be there tomorrow. So make sure that you go get them today at built.com. And if you haven't tried the puffs, I'll let you on a little secret because it's what friends do. A chocolate covered marshmallow protein bar. Yeah, you heard it right. Delicious flavored marshmallow covered in 100% real chocolate that is packed with protein. Make every day your birthday with Built's birthday cake puffs. Built has taken the delicious experience into biting into a fresh slice of birthday cake and enrobed, I didn't even know that was a word, enrobed in 100% white chocolate and added with sprinkles. 150 calories, 16 grams of protein, only 9 grams of sugar. This limited time flavor is an amazing option if you are looking for a healthy way to get flavor and variety in your day. Here's our offer. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off on your order. Again, that promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com.
Yeah,
Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen. For your next listen, make sure to check out the Locked On NBA Big Board. Host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and the author of the NBA Big Board newsletter gives fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, he's got big boards. It's free. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. After blowing out the Mavericks in Game 5 and seemingly taking control of the series, the Suns went into Dallas with a chance to close out the series. Instead, Luka Doncic scored 33 points, and the Mavericks outscored the Suns by 12 in the second quarter, took a 15-point lead into halftime, and never looked back as they cruised to a 113-86 win to force a Game 7 in Phoenix. Adam, what impressed you the most about the Mavericks in this bounce-back win?
The swagger.
Ooh.
The swagger. I mean, I'm telling you, this is a series that has felt over no fewer than three times. And it really has. And it just, the home team obviously dominating, not just, I mean, these are kind of blowout wins. We're getting a series, a very close series of blowout wins. But I can't help but think about Luka walking through the tunnel, and he was caught on video saying, hey, everybody's talking that trash. They're talking that trash right. And feeling good when they're up. Let's see. And I just, when I watched that video, I don't know how you felt. When I watched it, I thought, man, Luka's awfully confident for a guy that just got beat down really badly and is now one game away from elimination. But tonight, that confidence, that swagger was on full display, and it wasn't just from him. It was from the entire Dallas Mavericks roster. Jalen Brunson, Reggie Bullock tonight was doing the hands behind the back, lean forward defensive strategy on Devin Booker, basically just telling him, like, yo, I got this. So the swagger for them tonight was incredible. Mm-hmm. And for at least there's some things on Phoenix side as well, but for Dallas, I was just so impressed with their confidence in this game.
Yeah. Luka just not being afraid to get Chris Paul on a switch and just go one-on-one, just saying, look, man, this is my torch now. I'm going at you one-on-one and you can't stop me. And that's part of the swagger. And I think, you know, the statue that's one day built of Luka Doncic will be him walking down the court, head turned, talking smack to whoever's behind him, whoever he just like posted up and dunked on or whatever he did. That's going to be like, that's to me, like sort of the lasting image when I'm watching. It's like every time down the court, he's trash talking with somebody. He is confident. He should be confident. The Suns can't stop him. Win or lose, Luka Doncic is scoring points, right? Yeah. And they just have no answer for him. You could throw Mikal Bridges, Chris Paul, Cam John, like name DeAndre Ayton, name Suns good defender. That guy has not been able to stop Luka Doncic. No number of them has been able to stop Luka Doncic. He's been incredible, averaging over 30 points in the series.
You mentioned scoring the points, but you look at it tonight, he was 11 of 26, which is obviously not that great. But I think it disguises. He was 9 of 14 from the free throw line. And as a team, 27 of 36, 36 free throw attempts for Dallas. They were living in the bonus. He drew an enormous amount of fouls. You talk about he wasn't afraid to go at Chris Paul. He relished going at Chris Paul. He knew he could get by him. He knew he could outmuscle him. And he knew when he did, he was either going to score or draw fouls. And that was really part of what sort of defined this game. I'm so excited for a game seven. And if you go to the other end, if you go to the other end here, the other thing that's interesting to me, Chris Paul tonight, 13 points, 4 of 7, 36 minutes, just 13 points, 4 assists. Wasn't like he was getting it done there. 5 turnovers. Last year, the Suns skated through the Western Conference. A lot of banged up teams. They're a great team. I'm not trying to take anything away from them.
Right.
But they did not get physically tested. I wonder, and I just am asking myself, is Chris Paul tired? Was that first round 6-game series that he had to go against Jose Alvarado? I know he pretends not to know his name. Jose got into him. He worked him. You start to see Chris Paul, he's just kind of had these games, these pockets of games in the series where you look at him and you go, is he too tired to get this done?
It looks like it. I mean, his production has fallen off game to game in this series, right? And look, they need more from Chris Paul. And I think a lot of the conversation over the next couple of days is going to be Chris Paul centric. But like, let's not let Devin Booker slide here. The Suns need way more from Devin Booker. He was good in game 5, okay? But then in game 6, good is not good enough right now. He's going toe-to-toe with Luka Doncic. And Devin Booker, like, you're the Suns MVP. You're the guy that they were pushing to win MVP this year. They the whole PR campaign behind you. You're not playing anything close to it. Not even MVP. Like, you need to go... You need to score, but you're the scorer on this team, and you need to go bucket for bucket with Luka. Like, that's your job. And you scored 11 points after the first quarter. So quarters 2, 3, and 4, you scored 11 points in this game. And that, and you just need more from him, man. Like, you need, if he's that dude, he can't have nights like this when Luka's on the other side. completely consistent, win or lose, scoring over 30 points. They need more from him.
Yeah, they need more. I don't know if they're going to get it. It's going to be an interesting one. I mean, I believe it's Sunday. It's probably going to be a day game. Game sevens are always chaos. Like, we've had this series now, all blowouts. The home teams have looked great. You think, okay, advantage Phoenix. I don't know. Day game. Who knows who the official? We have yet to have the Scott Foster game in the playoffs here for Chris Paul in this round. So you never know.
That would be the worst thing that the NBA could do, right? Like, that would be maybe not the worst. The meanest thing the NBA could do to Chris Paul would be like, hey, buddy, here's your Scott Foster game seven. Let's go.
Well, it would be the worst thing. You were right the first time. It would be the worst thing they could do, because if Phoenix loses, that becomes the story. It would be all about that.
They'll avoid it. They'll avoid it. They're smart enough to avoid that.
I think they are as well. But here's the thing about this series, you know, in game seven, Phoenix, and I don't mean this is going to sound like I'm hating on them. I'm saying we don't know if they are a front running team, because they have been in front for two full seasons. They've been in front. We, of course, know that when they lost to Milwaukee and the series got tied, it was a four games in a row Milwaukee won. Once they kind of figured it out, it was four games. This is the hardest we have seen outside of the finals last year. The hardest we have seen Phoenix sort of get punched in the mouth.
Yes.
While I think that this swings back and it's a game and you shake it off and let's see what happens, I don't know. It's such a mystery to me what's going to happen in game seven. My prediction, if you were to ask me, this is like both teams under 100 points, a really ugly one. And
we'll see
which one guy is the guy that sort of steps up for each team.
A lot of loose balls, like a lot of diving on the floor, a lot of elbows, a lot of that kind of stuff. Shout out to Jalen Brunson, by the way. I mentioned Devin Booker. Jalen Brunson took on that assignment tonight a lot, and he just gets really low. Like, that guy, he continues to impress. He just gets so low into Devin Booker's body, doesn't let Devin get into, like, those spots that he likes to get to in that mid-range area, doesn't let him get into those comfortable turnarounds. He just bullies dudes. It does not matter how tall he is. It does not matter how big he is. That guy has been awesome and has been such a big reason why the series is going seven games, right? Because it can't all be Luka, even if he is the best player. Games.
Unbelievable. Game seven. Game seven. We already have it.
Isn't it fun? Isn't this fun? All right. Coming up, which team that plays Friday has the best chance to avoid a game seven and advance to the conference finals? That's next. But first, today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all of your betting needs and sports information. Find all of the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. Schedules came out today, so now's the time to get in on that. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sport wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, we're going to get to our countdown to the weekend here in a minute, but first, our next slate of games. The Warriors play the Grizzlies in San Francisco with a chance to win and go to the Western Conference Finals, while the Celtics will go to Milwaukee to face the Bucks, who have a 3-2 lead. Adam, who has the better chance to close out the series Friday night, Warriors or Bucks?
I'm going to say, oh man, this one's tough. I'm going to say Warriors, in large part because I just think that the Grizzlies are a little bit more solvable. I mean, I think that Milwaukee-Boston game, both teams are pretty even. Those are going to be coin flip games that come down to the wire, as has so many of them so far. The other end, it's funny that I'm saying it's the Warriors when we just saw them lose by 50, not 30, not 40, but 50 points. So
at that point, it might as well be a million points at that point. It's just so many points.
And I'll say this, Wes, we reduce basketball so often to just one or two players. And you look at it, Klay Thompson's still there, Draymond Green's still there, Curry, Poole. But they've lost some guys, man.
Yeah.
I mean, losing Gary Payton, Otto Porter now, Andre Iguodala, you know, just guys that they're not their best players, but they are good role players. They do connect the team. They do fill assignments that you need guys to fill. And, you know, I do worry about – I will say this. I think that the game six is closer to a must-win for Golden State maybe than a lot of people would look at it or think about. They just need to get that one. They can't let it linger, get to seven. You're already banged up. Get this one over with and get a little bit of a rest head start for the conference final.
Well, and game seven's in Memphis, which is no good either for them. So I'm with you. I think the Warriors have a better chance, but that's more of a reflection of what I think about Bucks Celtics than what I think about the Warriors versus the Grizzlies, right? I have no idea who wins Bucks Celtics. I would probably lean Bucks right now, but again, they have home court. But who knows what can happen. I'll tell you this though. I think the Grizzlies have revealed some really fatal flaws in the Warriors. And I I don't like. I know that the Grizzlies came out. They wanted to prove something without Ja Morant. They back against the wall, had to win, had to force a game six, all this stuff in Memphis. But we're talking, like you said, we're not talking about a 20-point loss. We're talking about a 50-point loss. And they came out with no urgency. They were not there to meet the moment. They were coming in talking all kinds of smack with whoop that trick and all that kind of stuff. And I just don't, that worries me. Like that kind of arrogance, that worries me. Because I know that you're Steph and Clay and Draymond and you're Steve Kerr. And, you know, it shouts to Kevon Looney because he never gets thrown into those conversations. He's got rings. But you haven't earned this stuff, man. Like you've been out of the playoffs for 2 years. And this is a different team now. And I hopefully that's a wake-up call for them because they don't get to do this anymore. They don't get to skate on just sheer talent anymore the way that they used to.
I got to say, I love their swagger. Like you saw Draymond and Steph. It's, to me, it's like Luka in the hallway. I'm willing to sort of go so far in that if I lose, everyone's going to point and laugh at me. And that's what happened. Like,
okay,
Draymond dancing to whoop that trick out there was him saying, I am so unafraid of losing game six that I'm willing to sit here and create the meme that you will use against me if I lose.
I guess I see your point there. I think that they should be afraid to lose, though.
I do, too.
The Grizzlies are a really good team.
Bravado, though. I appreciate the bravado. Even if I think it's crazy, I appreciate their willingness to sort of put themselves in that spot. And by the way, you know, Kendra Andrews, it's funny. The report was I asked Steph how you feeling tonight, and he said, whoop that trick or whatever. What are you going to do? And I kind of wonder, I was like, was that an on-the-record thing? I wonder if Steph Curry gets in the locker room and he's like, yo, I wasn't trying to get that reported. Let's just have some fun here. You never know. But sometimes you poke the bear like that.
Yeah, you don't want to risk it. It is Friday, which means it's time to count down to the weekend, Adam. You have the top five awards that you have invented, and this is an official list, that you've invented and named after players, and of course inspired by the news that Larry Bird and Magic Johnson will have conference finals MVP awards named after them starting this year. Let's just get right to it. Let's get to your list.
Well, first of all, the Eastern Conference champion trophy is now called the Bob Cousy, and the Western Conference one is now called the Oscar Robertson. And then you have a MVP for each conference finals, and that's what you're referring to, the Larry Bird and the Magic Johnson. First of all, I want to know, are you going to refer to it this year? If the Miami Heat advanced to the finals, are you going to say they won the Cousy?
Can I be honest with you? I'm not going to refer to it ever at all for any reason. I don't care who wins your Eastern Conference MVP. Right, I don't care about a fake trophy to get to the finals. Isn't that what we had the banners for? Like, why do we keep making stuff up to do more things? Like, it's all PR stuff. I mean, obviously, it's all PR stuff. But no, and first of all, if the Heat ever win, I don't expect them, when I'm walking in to cover them in that building, to ever refer to anything as a koozie or a Larry Bird. That's never happening. So the team that I cover is never going to refer to it. And so I find it hard to believe that I will ever refer to it in that way.
So in baseball, we have the Cy Young. Everybody knows what it is. In hockey, you have the Conn Smythe. You have the Hart Trophy. You have, like, they do this. Everything is known, and that's how it's referred to. I hope we don't get that. I don't want to have to refer. I guess we already refer to the Larry O'Brien, so we already have that. But it gets confusing when you have too many. But that didn't stop me from creating my own
From making more.
From making more. And I have one honorable mention for you first that I actually like. This one is the only one that's, like, fully tongue-in-cheek. The rest of them are a little tongue-in-cheek, but this one's fully. The LeBron James Award. And this goes to any person who has the most passive-aggressive pressers, tweets, or quotes at any time throughout the season. You just wrap it up and you say, okay, you won the LeBron this year. You were incredible with passive aggressive comments.
Right. It's not for the most, like, 27-7-7s. It's not just for just being an amazing, maybe arguably the greatest basketball player of all time. No. Like, you could make a case that should be the MVP award. Like, no, it's for passive aggressivity. I like it. Who gets it this year?
I think Joel Embiid was a late push. I think he was a really late push for this one.
Not for MVP, but for the LeBron. He wins the LeBron.
I also like it to where you can award it at any time. So it's like tonight, he would have been awarded it just on the spot. They'd be like, breaking news. Following today's presser, Joel Embiid has been awarded the LeBron James. All right, that one was tongue-in-cheek. Now we'll get to the real one. And you're going to think this one's real, but it is. The Gilbert Arenas Award. The Gilbert Arenas Award. I don't know how many people remember that.
For great locker room behavior?
Great locker. Not for that. People don't remember Gilbert Arenas back in the day started a blog in like 2003. Like the internet was barely around. And here he is with a blog and he's telling jokes and he's telling stories and he's taking you behind the scenes. He was ahead of his time. Nowadays we have the
Original Players Tribune.
The Original Players Tribune. But now we have the Dream on Green podcast. We got guys who are great at Twitter and social media. We remember Matisse Thybulle, the video documentaries he did inside the bubble. He's so talented at that. So I think this is the Gilbert Arenas Award, the best. It could be social media, it could be podcast, it could be blogging. The best content creator of NBA players.
Draymond this year.
Draymond dominated. It was an unbelievable unanimous vote for Draymond Green.
This is 2016 Steph of creating content.
It really was, man. I like it. Good.
All right, that's a good one. I like that one.
The next one, the AC Green Award. AC Green, here's why it's named after him. AC Green played 1,192 games consecutively. It be a streak that began in November of 1986 and lasted all the way until April of 2001, spanning three decades. Absolutely insane. But here's the thing, Wes. We are in the era where guys sit for no reason. They rest. They do this or that. And whenever we do point, like who's the points per game leader? Joel Embiid led the NBA in points per game. Well, yeah, because he missed 15 games. Right. I want an award for whoever plays the most minutes. And I would love in the final month of the season, if instead of getting guys resting for no reason, you look around and all of a sudden it's like, hey, Mikal Bridges, you're neck and neck right now with Nikola Jokic for most minutes played this year. And it becomes a little thing where you're trying to win the AC.
I like it.
I don't know if AC Green's cool enough that people want to win the AC Green Award, but I do like the idea of this like Iron Man Award.
And you got to tie like a bunch of money to it. for the motivation. This year would have been Mikal Bridges. Slightly, like less than 100 minutes over DeMar DeRozan.
But 100 in this context is actually...
Oh, no, it's actually the two Bridges. It was Mikal Bridges and Miles Bridges were just 20 minutes apart. Yeah.
Imagine that, a little battle down the end. Like, it's game 82. You're supposed to be
the Bridges Award.
Miles Bridges plays 48 minutes for some... Everybody's like, why is he playing so many minutes? He's trying to go after the AC Green.
That's good. I like it. I like it.
Number three. I honestly think this one could work. We have like the scoring champ, you know, we got,
you're saying that like, I really like the last one. I think that's a really good motivational. They should have that one. Okay.
They should have these awards. The Steph Curry Award, most made threes in a season.
Ooh.
I like this one. Most total made three pointers.
Total. Okay.
Threes are becoming obviously such a big part of the game. There's so many talented ones. I like the idea of just charting the most made threes. Of course, Steph Curry will probably win it every year. He's in the NBA for a while.
You won it this year. Yeah. So Steph Curry would just have a lot of awards named after him. So I think what we should probably do for now is just like name it like the Ray Allen Award or the Reggie Miller Award. And then once he retires, then just change it to the Steph Award.
That does happen. There's precedent for this. So it does make sense. I like it, though. I just think it'd be cool, especially when Steph, as he begins his decline at some point, I do think it would be cool to see who takes that throne. Right now, we have one guy that dominates it. But I think going forward, it might go back and forth between multiple contenders for it.
There's like weird people like in the all-time three-pointers list too, like in the top 10. Isn't like Paul Pierce in it or something? Paul Pierce is like number 9. Jason Terry is 7. That's Vince bizarre. Carter is 6. Like, man, you do not associate threes with Vince. Like, let's call it the Vince Carter Award.
So many games though, man. I mean, that's the thing about it. If you want a hilarious list, look at the top 10 all-time of Minnesota. Did we do this one time on the show? The Minnesota's top 10 three-point shooters of all time?
No.
Makes it's a hilarious list. It's like some of the names on that list are bizarre. The next one, you know, when I do this, I have to always mention either Herb Jones or Nikola Jokic. We have the Nikola Jokic Award handed out every year for the rookie of the year from the second round, not the rookie of the year, the best rookie of the second round
of the playoffs.
No. This is of the regular season. So you have rookie of the year. And then you have the second round rookie of the year. Like it's almost a diamond in the rough rookie of the year.
Oh, of the second round of the draft. Okay, gotcha.
Second round of the draft. Sorry, did I say playoffs in the draft?
Okay, I like that. I like that a lot.
Best second round draft pick. That's basically what it comes down to.
That should be an award. That should be, that's like the Mr. Irrelevant Award or something. Yeah.
Mr. Irrelevant.
We're going to name it the Jokic?
There's like Herb Jones would win it this year, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Easily. Actually, it's funny. This is the double. I did a double whammy. It's the Jokic award goes to Herb Jones. This is incredible.
That felt on purpose.
It wasn't. I actually discovered this live on the show. This is another one, though, I think would actually be really cool. So, and then the last one, dead serious on this one. We should have it. The Rasheed Wallace. You can guess what it means. Whoever collects the most technicals in the regular season. This year, I believe it was Luka Doncic. He wins the Rasheed Wallace. That's where I'm going.
Yeah, Draymond would have a lot of those too, right? So
he probably would have. He's collected a few. DeMarcus Cousins has a handful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. DeMarcus Cousins like three-peated, didn't he? He probably three-peated on this.
The first to three-peat since Rasheed Wallace. It's pretty impressive.
You call it the DeMarcus Cousins Award too. Those are all incredible. I think we should have all of them. In fact, I think we should just replace like all the boring like defensive player of the year, sixth man. Just replace all that with this. This is way more fun. This is way better. And you know what? Like fans would still get like really pissed. Like I could be like, if Draymond got the Gilbert Arenas Award, I can already hear Heat fans being like, well, it should be Duncan Robinson because he's an active player with a podcast too. And everybody just gets up in arms about that. So.
I would love for Twitter debates over that. It would be absolutely hilarious.
Long, like 2,000 word think pieces on like every website you could think of about like, you know, why the actual like 3-pointer thing should be different or whatever. I don't know. It'd be fun. All right. That'll do it for us today. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA wherever you listen to the podcast for 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. Until next Friday. Find me over at Locked On Heat, and Adam is over on Locked On Nuggets. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Thanks for joining me, Adam.
Thank you.